Greetings and welcome to MERS Monday, the official podcast of the MERS Political Newsletter. I'm Kyle Malin, joined by the boss, John Rurink, and Target Insight pollster, Ed Zarpolis, with a lot of paper here in front of us. And Ed, we had some polling results come out Thursday and Friday, and we thought we'd have you in here because we've gotten reaction, as I know you have too, with folks asking questions about why we did this and why we did that, and we thought it would just be good to have you in. We can just answer them for all our listeners.
Well, first of all, you have to go back to 2012, and a lot of the calls I'm getting are from people who basically have preconceived what the polling should look like in advance, what they want to see on Election Day. Okay, the poll that MERS asked me to do with the fact is to measure where our things are at today, not what we want them to be in 30 days or what the other side, what they do, the evidence, where are they at today? Secondly, we're not trying to predict who's going to be the turnout people on Election Day. Remember, Romney's people said, this is what the electorate is going to look that Election Day. This poll was designed to say, people tell us who's going to be voting on August. Now, starting in July, we're going to be much tougher on our screen because we're going to be within weeks of the primary. Basically, you know, who do you tend to lead to vote for? We're going to go from, are you going to be voting the Democratic Party? Are you going to be voting Republican? But that doesn't start now until after the 4th, because a lot of the candidates haven't started their TV campaigns yet. There hasn't been mailings out there. And you've seen this before. It's like, when do you kick into the hard things? Well, I'm not going to do that before the 4th, because a lot of the candidates have yet to do much TV. Schuette hasn't done much, per se. And so we're measuring things we're at. And the other thing is, just for, I jumped ahead a little bit, neither Gretchen Whitmer, Sherrie Thounder, or Bill Schuette are all running below their party base in the poll. They're all running behind their party base in the poll. What is unique in this poll saying is independents are right now determining this if election right now things don't change. Because nearly all Democrats are voting for Gretchen, nearly all Republicans are voting for Bill Schuette. It's the independent vote. But the bottom line, this poll is based on where are things at today, not where we want them to be in the future. The
pollsters are in a hot seat right now, aren't they?
They are, because they don't look at what they're doing. For example, those of pollsters I know were working with MERS all of 2016, we never said Hillary was going to win. She always said she was leading. Secondly, the polls measure the popular vote, not the Electoral College vote. Also, the night of election at 8:20 in the evening, what did we say? Who was going to be winning in Michigan, or at least tied, was Trump versus Hillary Clinton, correct?
It was a tie, even though some newspapers had already declared it for Hillary Clinton.
So, for example, on the regional transit attacks, we had it basically in September at 49, a little bit ahead for the no and a little behind. And that's basically what came out on Election Day. So the bottom line, from MERS's point of view, is what you've asked me to do ever since I've been polling with you, back, what is it like today at this snapshot in time? No bias or try to predict things. Let the voters tell you what's going to happen.
Now, one of the things I wanted to address was this idea that we're going to have a lot of progressive votes come out, that the progressive vote is motivated to come out because of Donald Trump and what have you, and you're seeing this reflected in the rallies like what we had this weekend. How do you accurately get at that universe of people who went out and supported Bernie Sanders in 2016, and how do you get at whether they're going to show up in those kind of numbers in 2018?
Well, first of all, there isn't a Bernie Sanders candidate in Michigan right now. There ain't no marches.
Well, don't tell that to Abdul Al-Sayed or Sri Tanadar.
Well, the point being is, in order for to raise money, in order to keep hope alive for their candidates, they've got to say that. But let's be honest with you here, as a fact. Bernie Sanders had a ton of money spent in Michigan. He had rallies. He had young people marching all over that campus. I don't go around Michigan right now. You have college and universities campuses, and there's marching for Al-Sayed. Okay? Sherrie Thounder is just him. Okay? There is no marches going around. I do admit in Detroit, in urban core areas, when I talk to candidates, state rep and state senate, they want Sherrie Thounder or an Al-Sayed mark going to it versus Gretchen Whitmer, okay? But there ain't, there's demanding on that. Could things tighten up? Definitely, okay? Things would tighten up. But the bottom line, here's something else that's very important is there a progressive movement out there? Well, bottom line, there is right still in this poll, 43% of the voters said they were Democrats and 40% said they were Republicans, okay? And for a gubernatorial year, it's usually Republicans have an advantage, typically. Well, this is tight, okay? But what the poll is showing, the fact is, it's the independent voters who are getting engaged this year, more than that I've seen in the past this early in the election.
And that was something else I wanted to address here, because what we did is we took 400 voter sample on the Republican side, 400 on the Democratic side.
Plus an independent 800 sample of general election voters. Okay,
explain that, because I had somebody question me this over the weekend. How do we include independents in this if it was 400 Republican and 400
Democrat?
Because
basically when we finished the statewide, we actually had those people who said vote Republican. We had to call extra people to get the extra respondents to get up to 400 for each party.
Oh, okay. So we didn't take 400 from one, add 400, and boom, we got 800.
As a matter of fact, if what you're saying were true, how do we come up with 138 nonpartisan voters in the sample?
And so the 800 voter sample was 135 non-committed independents.
Independent voters, okay?
Okay.
John Ruwink is a tightwad. He doesn't want to pay for anything other than not even an inch over that.
He didn't argue. He just said, hey.
The proper term is Dutchman.
Oh, Dutchman. Okay. All right. Well, I don't want to do any racial ethnic assaults here, you know, in the politically correct community.
There you go. If you attach frugal to Dutch, they take that as a compliment.
I would assume they did. Yeah. I've been to Dutch weddings and Christian Reform in West Michigan, and yes, compared to East Michigan, the punch and the finger sandwiches do not satisfy me.
Anyway, but continuing on here with this, clearly, though, that there was an independent sample on this. How do you get at the younger voters? Because that's always another criticism, that the younger voters who maybe haven't voted before and maybe inclined to vote for Abdul this time around, How do you screen for that?
Well, first of all, one, you got to incorporate some cell phones. But today, cell phone, non-cell phones, the bottom, adult, older people got cell phones too, okay? And so that doesn't change. What you have to do, you have to screen for them, okay? You got to call extra people. You know, who's the youngest voter at home? And you've got to continue calling. And then you get to a point you have to reweight the sample if you're undersampling. So it's always, anybody who does polling, what a stratified random sample means, the fact that your poll, when it's done, reflects who's going to be turning out on election day, or what you think is going to be turning out on election day. So if you don't have any young people, you got to keep calling until you get young people. That's where cell phone usage is being done, and there are landlines. In Michigan, people still have landlines, okay, especially the older voters. So cell phones are typically used for your younger voters.
How many cell phones did we have in this sample?
About 28%.
And that continues to increase with each poll, doesn't it? It seems like we keep using more and more.
Well, you want to, okay, but like, again, unless his budget's going to increase for surveys, I still have to limit to what I can put into the survey.
Because why do cell phones cost more?
Because the fact, you can't, for example, in a poll like this, I can do some blended surveys. I can do automated on the landlines, okay? But you're not, by law, I cannot do automatic dialing. I have to physically have to call people. Mm. So I have to pay for people to make phone calls.
If you're going to do a cell phone.
That's correct. So that's cost additional charges. Now, eventually, you know, everybody's going to do this, going to have to pay for the extra charge, you know. But the bottom line, cell phones do cost additional money.
Hmm. Do you have any questions, John?
Nope.
Oh, okay. All right. What do you think of news outlets shying away from polling because they felt like they got burned in 2016?
Oh, they burned themselves. It's the talking heads and their interpreters that burned them because the polls did not lie.
Do you have examples of that?
I won't go public on that. You can, John. Some of those people that I'd be picking on also hire me for some work, so I do have to be very careful, okay? But the bottom line is that, let's just take the national poll, because everybody can relate to that, okay? The poll on election day basically was measuring popular vote. It was not measuring the electoral college vote. You'd have to do a poll in each state and then decide who won this. And, well, each state varies. You win all the congressional districts or portion of them. And the other thing is, you got to look at history. If you go back the last 50 or 60 years, the only time Democrats win the Electoral College 90% of the time is when they lead the Republican by at least 4 or more points. Hillary did not beat Trump by 4 or more points. She was at 3 points or less. So if you look on the history of the fact, there's no way Hillary is going to win the Electoral College just with winning the popular vote. So bottom line, the fact, the polls never said Hillary was winning. Tell me a poll that showed Hillary winning. She was leading. You got to be over 50.1 or 52% plus the margin of error. So if you're doing a poll, the national polls are about 3% margin error. You'd have to have a 3% victory for Hillary Clinton to say that she was actually winning, because the poll has a margin of error.
And the polls leading up to the election basically had her up about 5 points, maybe.
Correct.
Something like that.
But most of the time she was not over 50%. She was ahead underneath 50%. She was not leading and over 50%. Okay, I've done a number of interviews since this poll came out. I says, well, give me the polls in Michigan that you said that you're saying showed Hillary Clinton. All of them were, Hillary was under 50%. So I said she was always leading but not winning.
The trick is the sample, isn't it? Because there was a lot of people who voted for Trump in 2016, hadn't voted in years.
Correct.
And you have to account for that in order to get an accurate sample. Your poll is only as good as your sample, correct?
That is correct. That's the reason why when you screen for voters, you have to give them permission to say that, you know, I just don't eliminate somebody. You have to ask the voter, get their permission, that are they going to be voting? I didn't go and say, I want these many Democrats, many Republicans. I ask that you get them to say they're going to be voting. So bottom line in this poll here, you know, I don't, if you notice when we wrote the survey, the front part, I didn't eliminate anybody, did I? Then I went on and asked them, okay, their intention to vote, will they be voting? Will they be voting this primary or that primary? We let the voters tell us, okay? Now I look at some history, some patterns, be sure that I don't have, if I don't have any African Americans to vote, I know I'm undersampling that. But the bottom line, Mitt Romney, when they did polls in 12, they were predicting this is how many blacks, how many whites, how many young. That's the problem when you get into mess. You let the poll, even the Free Press poll on election night. Okay, they were basing that on what they thought who was going to be voting. That's how they weighted their sample. When we did the mirror survey, we had the voters tell us who was voting on election day versus predetermined who was going to be voting election day. So sometimes you remember every one out of 20 polls are going to be wrong. Okay, so that's be a given. But the point being is you have to do multiple polls to see patterns. So far, knock on wood, okay, that when I'm looking to measure where we're at versus trying to predict things, it's much easier to say the poll data is reflecting what's happening right now on the field.
Mm-hmm. I also want to ask you about ballot proposals. Let's move on to the ballot proposals here. Because we had some folks kind of push back on how we came up with the wording that we used in these questions. Now, we were very specific on these because we don't have official wording from the Secretary of State.
Correct.
We don't have the 100 words. And so I think we tried as best we can to make them as
impartial.
neutral as possible and try to stick away from
the bottom line is, as after doing this poll, we had to say, what do people have access to today without a media campaign or advertisement? Bottom line, the only words we know that would potentially be legal is what was appeared on the top of the ballot petition gathering. Okay, so we took those first 100 words, and that's what we shared with them. We didn't give any description. We didn't get any detail. These are what they would be reading if they went to ballot box. So what all this poll said was, if the campaigns do not educate,
where we're at.
That this is where we're at.
Well, let's specifically talk about the legalized marijuana, because that's the one that seemed to have gotten a lot of attention. That we have it at 47% opposed right now. There's been prior polls. I think Epic MRA did one for Normal that had it near 60% or over, I think.
Correct, but they weren't testing legal ballot language as normally legalese would say it. There was no descriptions in first 100 words. Okay, now remember, if I go out and put in it's going to go to education, go to roads, well, you're biasing the question per se. Okay, you're going to tax us for this.
And all we asked was, do you support legalizing marijuana.
Well, the bottom
period.
Line,
that was it. I mean, that was the language.
Well, how about we just read the question, okay? I think that's the easiest thing to do. Let's just read it. Okay, the first ballot proposal would authorize the personal possession and use of marijuana by individuals aged 21 years and older and control the commercial production and distribution of marijuana. That's all we asked.
And you got that right from the petition, right?
Right from the petition. Because right now, that's the only thing that I have that I know that legally is defined in this ballot proposal.
Just like the minimum wage one, we asked pretty much as flat out as possible, do you support phasing in the minimum wage from $10 to $12?
Correct. So if you look at this polling data, it's basically breaking along party lines. Republicans more opposed, Democrats majority support, and the independents are what's flipping it over or under 50%. On the marijuana proposal itself, you know, the Democrats are leaning with 57%. Most of the groups supporting this are because they want Democrats to use it as a turnout to vote number are Democrats. So the bottom line, amongst Democrats, marijuana is getting 57%, nearly to 60% that Epic MRA and the other polls have done. Republicans are one of the opposing it, and the independents are split.
Do these ballot proposals drive up turnout? And what's your sense what this mix might mean at the end of the day come the November general election?
Well, right now, it's
assuming these five that we pulled on get the...
Well, the difficulty is going to be is the fact is that whose advantage is it? If I'm for something, I'm less likely to vote if I'm against something. If it's going to feel that's going to impact me, okay, then usually the no vote gets more. Remember, ballot proposals history say that typically the no vote gets more excited from voters than yes voters. Now, it doesn't mean this is not going to change this time around, but also the fact is that don't we have Republicans that are pro it or Democrats are against it or that type of thing? So it might be a wash. And the other thing is the fact is that we're trying to look at Michigan compared to other states. Other states, you know, they don't have as much urban core or African-American vote or minority vote or other people, you know, that type of thing. So you can't necessarily compare apples to oranges. Can it have potentially a turnout? Yes. But the difficulty is going to be at the fact we did not ask in this poll why you're voting. Is this going to turn you out and vote? The question is not in this poll, in other polls, the fact is, do you have access to marijuana? The people who want to smoke have access to marijuana. The people who really want to smoke marijuana, do you really care whether or not the money goes to roads or to education? They want to smoke, they're going to want to smoke. Hey, can I get my marijuana now without any taxes? Most people I talk to around the state, they say yes.
Okay.
So the question is that what's their motivation? How many people are not getting the marijuana? We don't know that. and nor did we test it in the survey. Mm-hmm. But the bottom line amongst the group that this is being supported, the group that are supporting the amendment typically to be, they Democrat. Tend to be Democrats, and it's leading with 57% of the vote. Right now, which groups are coming out opposed tend to be more Republican.
You can't really tell through this poll necessarily this is going to drive up turnout. We don't know because we didn't necessarily test that.
But bottom line, I don't see much changes. I see amongst younger Democrats, yes. Younger Republicans, no.
In the past, so looking retroactively, is there a ballot proposal that really pushed up turnout in your memory?
No. Okay. Not to the degree that they're expecting.
The only one I remember us talking about was Proposal B way back when, and that pushed out the Catholics in mass.
Well, was that the assisted suicide.
Suicide, but there again, but the Catholics actually is what, well, the point being, Republicans thought, remember what's kind of funny there, I predict would be an additional 120,000 Democrats voting. That's why Judford Granholm became the AG. Because the only people spending money on assisted suicide were Catholics from Southeast Michigan, the Archdiocese of Detroit. It nearly doubled the voter turnout in key areas in Macomb County, which allowed all those school board seats to become elected. There were more Macomb County voters with Ward versus Wayne County. That was the only vote. But that was both sides, Republicans and Democrats. That was a nonpartisan issue with both by with virtual. And also the church got involved in that particular thing. Mm-hmm. Proposal A, that was the March election, but still didn't see high turnout. Proposal B was about the only thing I could say had a major impact in turnout. But outside of that, no, I have not seen something.
Even when we had medical marijuana on the ballot back in 2008?
No. No. The Democrats' party numbers are good. Their ID is 3 points higher than Republicans, okay? They're a little bit more motivated right now than Republicans to vote, okay? But when I asked them their intent to vote, 91% of Republicans are committed to vote in November, but only 87% of Democrats are committed in November.
Well, Ed, thanks for coming here, sharing this data, answering some questions for us. Always appreciate it. That's our poll, Target Insight.
Thank you.
Joining us on the other end of the line is Secretary of State candidate Mary Treader Lang on the Republican side. Good morning. How are you?
Good morning, Kyle.
Well, why don't you give our listeners, first of all, an update on your campaign and how things are going?
Well, to give an update on everyone, the campaign is going fabulously. We are gaining lots of momentum and traction throughout the state, putting on a good 6,000-7,000 miles every month. And as we travel amongst the state, many precinct delegates are hopping on our team, as well as elected officials and former state party folks and officers, executive people in various things like Oakland County. And on top of that, former Secretary of State Candace Miller and Terry Lynn Land have all endorsed our candidacy.
So who are some of the more recent endorsements that you guys have received that you're very excited about?
I think I could say it's a number of the senators. We picked up the whole entire District 1, and Terry Lynn Land was a recent Secretary of State a couple months back that we picked up that we're delighted to have on board. We have Brooks Patterson, Sharon Wise, Susan Hines, former state party folks as well.
So for our listeners who may not be familiar with you, explain who you are and how you got interested in running for Secretary of State.
Well, I'm Mary Treader Lang, and they're running hard to be the next Secretary of State. My background of a business professional, 30 years, I've been a CPA working in various private industries and heading various divisions in an executive manner, divisions of business, finance, computer security, as well as business development and even government affairs. 15 years, I've been focused in computer security. Basically, I ran the district over at Ameritech before computer security was even a common household name. So I'd like to say that I have the modern-day set of skills that are really necessary for the next Secretary of State and to continue the forward momentum of our great state at this point. And how I got involved? Many political activists approached me and asked me to run, knowing that I have the set of skills to drive us forward and continue the forward momentum that we've worked so hard for the last 8 years.
Tell me how you think Ruth Johnson has done as Secretary of State.
Oh, I think Ruth Johnson has done a fabulous job. My platform of security optimization and stability, the one citizen, one vote, really complements and continues the forward momentum that she has done as far as cleaning up the voter files, continuing to partner up with other organizations to ensure that as individuals run are registered in multiple states, that we eliminate them off state of Michigan rolls if they have traveled and left our state. Overall, Ruth has done a really fabulous job, and I'm proud to continue that legacy as we move forward into the next 4 to 8 years.
Speaking about cleaning people off the rolls, have you been paying attention to this Supreme Court decision that came down in regards to the state of Ohio, where there was a group that challenged how Ohio was cleaning out its rolls? Basically, if you hadn't voted in the last two elections, they got sent mail, and if the folks never returned the mail back, they got dropped off the rolls, got taken to court, and the Supreme Court upheld it. Have you looked into that at all?
Well, yes, I've been kept apprised of that, and yes, that was something in which the state of Ohio has elected to clean up the rolls every 2 years if someone has not been out there to vote. We at the state of Michigan, again, under the legacy of Ruth Johnson, leading that after two federal election cycles, notification is sent out, and we determine whether or not they still reside in the state of Michigan before we would ever remove them from our voter files.
So you're okay with this type of practice?
Well, I think it's imperative that we continue to make sure that our files are cleaned and up to par. I mean, we in the state of Michigan have a lot more registered voters than sometimes eligible voters. Our statistics is almost 98% of those that are eligible are registered. So we're doing a good job keeping it clean, but we want to make sure that we keep the voter files accurate and that it's one citizen, one vote, and you cannot vote in multiple states.
And also, I think this is designed to make sure that people who are voting in the same location. And folks could be having registered in Southfield, but then they move to Grosse Pointe or something like that.
Right, and that's to make sure that they are not voting in multiple locations throughout the state. For that very reason, that it's important that we continue to monitor the files. My plan of one citizen, one vote, as I mentioned, will continue the legacy of Ruth Johnson, but important, too, that we continue to clean up the voter files. I plan on partnering up with Erica States, which is another form beyond the Kansas project that Ruth Johnson's utilizing, that we can identify individuals that are registered in multiple states. And when they're voting in other states, we need to remove them from the state of Michigan file. On top of that, my one citizen, one vote, I plan on reaching out to each and every Secretary of State throughout the nation to develop a partnership with them so that as people are moving amongst our states, that we're cleaning up the files. It's imperative. You know, this is a right and a privilege to vote, but it's also to ensure that it's one citizen, one vote, which is a key component of my platform, that you should only be voting one time.
How much fraud do you think is out there as far as voting fraud?
You know, the fraud necessarily, I know that the president had started a commission, and that has now since dissolved. And I think what is occurring at the voting of time of election is that our poll workers are not entirely trained to ensure to identify not only if someone is not a citizen, but also to make sure the process and the procedures are being adhered to throughout the election process. My plan of one citizen, one vote, that's where we plan on training, utilizing state-of-the-art training for not only the poll workers but the clerks to ensure that everyone is on the same page. I've even instilled a certification process so that at 30 days out, individuals have a certificate to say that they've been properly trained, understand the procedures on election day, and that when they come to work as a poll worker, that they have the certificate to say, yes, I know the process, the procedures, I know how to add, I know how to seal the bags, I know how to follow the procedures, and be there throughout the day to ensure that we have accuracy and efficiency throughout the day.
I know from having talked with clerks before that training those staff is always one of the more challenging aspects of the job, just because they're part-time, they're retired, they only do it three times a year. And I do know that that can be a very challenging job. Now, the thing that's gotten a lot more publicity, especially after 2016, is Russian hacking. And you being a computer expert, give us your impression on how prevalent that really was. Were the Russians really hacking our computer systems and screwing with our elections?
You know what? I can't be the one with the crystal ball to give you that background, but I can tell you, as the next Secretary of State, Mary Tudor Lang, I will prevent those type of situations. I plan on ensuring that I utilize my skills as a computer security background and expert to ensure that we have the firewalls in place and the protection there to assure that that hacking does not take place in our system. But probably most importantly to Kyle, I stand behind continuing a paper ballot. With my CPA background, you know, the auditing process, it's imperative that we have that paper ballot, and that's going to prevent any internet access and allowing any of that Russian or any other computer hacker, for that matter, to tap into the roles at the state of Michigan. That is imperative that we protect and ensure the integrity of each and every vote and the accuracy of our election process.
Now, you mentioned your CPA background. How active are you with that certified public accountant?
I began my career at KPMG. I went out into private industry and ran many divisions, and I actually looped back around and worked in business development over at Baker Tilly. But I've been active and on the board of the Michigan Association of CPAs. I'm very proud to be involved in the organization, and to this day, I'm still on the presidential advisory committee for the Michigan Association of CPAs, which is a very dynamic organization, and them as an organization have been very supportive of my candidacy. Just were with our governor, Rick Snyder, who's also a CPA.
Yeah, and I was just taking a look at this. I was taking a look at your licensing on Friday. So it looks like there's a registered license, and then you can also be like a certified public accountant, which is people who do it every day for a living. And you fall into that registered category, which is what Rick Snyder is, where you can basically say you're a CPA, you've had the training and so forth, but it's not what you do every day for a living.
Correct. That's accurate. I mean, I like to say once a CPA, always a CPA. I mean, we went through a very grueling educational process and testing process to ensure that we have the qualifications. And yes, I'm in a registered status, just like Rick Snyder, and probably most of the 25,000 members of the Michigan Association of CPAs in the same status. The certified public accountant are the public accountants. They're the big fours, and then the medium-sized firms, the Plant Morans, UHYs, and them. They're practicing public accounting. And even those CPAs there don't need to have those licenses unless they're practicing the accounting aspect.
Yeah, I had seen in some of your campaign stuff that you were helping some veterans with forms or whatnot. Is that a volunteer thing, or is that kind of a side job, or what is that?
No, that's a volunteer thing. I've done it a number of times with the Michigan Association CPAs that we've assisted on the tax preparations for those on active duty, as well as veterans. And I've been very active and involved with the Michigan Association of CPAs on various task force for the state of Michigan. Once Governor Snyder was elected, we all jumped in to help on various boards, and I've helped out with Department of Homeland Security. I've helped out with the roads, the retirement. I've volunteered to help out retirement folks with their tax preparations as well as other information. In many ways, I've given back to the state of Michigan utilizing my CPA skills. That was the primary reason that Governor Snyder appointed me as a regent over at Eastern Michigan University, was because of my CPA skills and background.
Well, let's move on to a couple ballot proposals that we may have in November. And the first one is this voters not politicians idea, where we take redistricting out of the legislature and put it in the hands of a, quote, independent commission. And the constitutional officer who's going to be overseeing this is the Secretary of State. And so the first question is that a role you think the Secretary of State should have?
Well, the Secretary of State today is overseeing the redistricting that occurs every 10 years, and it's scheduled in 2020. So because of those responsibilities, this voters not politician, if that is a ballot initiative and if it gets approved, right now the responsibilities of the Secretary of State to oversee it. However, it's a 12-person commission comprised pretty much of political neophytes that don't have the training to redistrict or have that basic special skill training or expertise to redistrict. So I think it's imperative that we have someone overseeing this to ensure the integrity and the process is adhered to. But that is a ballot initiative. It's not approved, but it is being overseen. It's a pretty much a power grab at this point.
So this wasn't anything that you signed. You didn't sign the Voters Not Politicians petition drive.
Absolutely not.
Why not?
Well, because it's a partisan power grab right now by seven leaders that are pretty much Democratic activists, upset that they can't win the election, so we're going to change the rules. Every 10 years, we've been redistricting, adhering to the Powell standards. They've been approved since the early 1980s. It's been approved not only legislatively, the Supreme Court. It's even gone up to the federal process when people are objecting to it. And it's all come back saying it was adhered to properly, accurately, and fairly. So now we're trying to change the rules. It's going to be comprised of 13 commissioners that have, as I indicated, political neophytes that don't have the background to redistrict, four Republicans, four Democrats, and five nonpartisans that have no alignment in any ways. And it's going to be redistrict by communities of interest where you can cross over counties, townships, and cities, and that's not the adherence to the Powell standards that have been adhered to for 40 years now.
And then I also wanted to ask you about this Promote the Vote that the League of Women Voters and the ACLU are pushing right now. This would create no reason absentee voting, same-day voter registration. Have you taken a look at that, and where do you think you're going to fall on it?
I can tell you right now I'm going to fall against it.
Okay.
You know, same-day registration, we are looking for tampering in the polls. That is something where people can vote absentee in one state and come over to the state of Michigan and have a same-day registration and think they can count on their vote. This is opening up a can of worms to tamper with what we have worked tremendously hard. As we indicated, even Ruth Johnson doing a great job of cleaning up the voter files. You know, Ruth removed over 500,000 deceased individuals before the 2016 election. Just imagine if she had not cleaned up the files before that election. Right now, we wouldn't have not only be a red state, but President Trump would not be elected as the president in a fair election process.
Just a couple more questions here before I let you go. Obviously, the Republican convention is going to decide who's the nominee is going to be. Right now, you are facing one other person. Stan Grote is looking at running as Shelby Township clerk. As folks are saying, you know, I know Stan, and he's been around Republican politics for a long time, kind of supporting him. How do you get them away from that, and how do you say, you know, I'm really the better fit for this post?
You know, Kyle, I think by myself traveling around the state of Michigan, it's people coming forward saying, you know, yeah, that individual, my opponent may have been part of the establishment, may be part of the political party for the last 30 years. But once they get to know the real Mary Treader Lang and understand what my background is, what my basis is, and that I am not politically motivated for this position, I am motivated for the pure passion of continuing to deliver the state of Michigan in the forward momentum. And really, that's where my heart is, and my platform speaks for itself. One citizen, one vote, respecting your time in line, security, optimization, and stability. People are really connecting with that, and as I travel around the state, individuals are, just as I indicated and started this interview, they're hopping on my team. They are making that change very easily to say that I am voting for you. I may have given a commitment at one point, but you are the person, and I am the driving force. I really can make that difference. I have the expertise and the background to do so, to move us forward in the right direction. And so I'm pretty confident that we will secure the nomination and then move on to the November general election.
It's got to be a little intimidating, though, going against Stan Grote, and just considering how many connections he's made and how many folks just feel like, yeah, you know, I kind of owe it to him because he helped me in this spot and that spot and delivered the 10th for me in that spot. Because you are just dealing with basically political operatives here at the convention level.
And that may be accurate, but you know what? You know, the exciting thing is, as it should always be, your vote is confidential. So you know, support may be breathed out of one side of your mouth. When you put the pencil to the paper, that's a whole other thing. So I am not scared of that opposition. I welcome it. I've been in a very competitive situation all my life, both not only with my career, but just in my athletics and everything else that I do in previous election positions, too.
Mary Treader Lang, she is running for the Secretary of State nomination for the Republican Party. Been very generous with your time this morning. Appreciate it.
Thank you very much, Kyle. Have a wonderful day, and more importantly, a wonderful 4th of July celebration for freedom.
That's going to do it for this week's edition of MERS Monday. Thanks to the boss, John Ruhring, Ed, for coming in to MERS World headquarters, Mary Treader Lang, and also AT&T for sponsoring this and all our other podcasts. Ed, what was the best comment that you received?
Best comment thing is the fact that the polls, basically, when people said, well, even the people who were supporting marijuana, when I told them what I did, they said, well, okay, thank you.
Thank you for doing this, Ed.
Because what it did to show the fact is that all the polls they've been paying for, they never tested. What happens if we get bad ballot language?
And so this shows you what happens if you get bad ballot language,
and you're going to have to spend money and spend it on education if you want to potentially win the meeting.
They had to take a longer drag of that dupe then after seeing some.
Well, I don't know, but with your boss being a tightwad, you may not be able to buy that marijuana.
I don't think we've got to worry about that. I think there's another boss who would make sure that never happens in my household. And with that, we're going to close the book on this week's edition. Until next week, I'm Kyle Wilson.